Thank you, Janne. It's nice to have live audience and see you all for many months. So my research is essential biomolecules in aquatic wood webs and how local and global scale environmental change influence on that. And you can see there my recent and near future research group and my funders and my current affiliation. So why is important to study essential biomolecules and what they are? So they are those compounds which animals cannot synthesize de novo sufficiently. And we need them. So, and for different organisms, there's different biomolecules which are essential. So like in terrestrial environments, they are like different compounds or different concentrations which are required. And now I'm talking about the aquatic wood webs, and there's some kind of requirements that animals or consumers can live. And they are, for zooplankton, they are carotenoids, they are sterols, they are omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, and they are amino acids. So this is the minimum what zooplankton needs to survive. And you can see here, I have put what are those biomolecules. And here you can see what they can have in their diet and maybe bioconvert if they have a genetic ability to do it. So my background is environmental engineering and environmental chemistry and measurements. So in my past, I have developed methods to measure these different kind of biomolecules from different organisms and have done some work. So why they are important? Here is more evidence. So here is the zooplankton. That is the key species or key food for fish. And here you can see the growth, and then here you can see the reproduction. So for growth, so we can grow with lower thresholds for biomolecules. But when we or animals reproduce, we require higher requirements for the diet. And here you can see that this Daphnia can grow with different kind of diet pretty well. But when it comes to the reproduction, there's only one diet which is like suitable for good optimal reproduction. And when we go upper in trophic levels, here is the rainbow trout juvenile, and here is this Daphnia, which I have fed to different kind of diets. And here is the algal diet, which contains these long-chain omega-3 PUFA. And here is two diets where Daphnia can grow, but when it's given to rainbow trout, it dies. It cannot survive with so low level of essential biomolecules. So this is why I'm interested of this research field, and I keep that this is very important in changing environmental because the appearance of different diet are changing. And that's when bottom-up regulation comes very important. This is Lake Vesijärvi, where we have some kind of measurements from 70s. And it has suffered from eutrophication, mostly by the sewage and farming. But nowadays, there's also the climate change. I don't have here the figures to show how different parameters have changed because my research focuses on these essential biomolecules. But basically, the climate change influence in increase in temperature of the lakes. And cyanobacteria are those which benefit mostly, even the slight changes of in temperature. And what happens then? Here is this Daphnia and its biomass. And when I saw this figure in Vesi Järvi Foundation scientific meeting, they were like, they said, is this possible? Even though there is very high predation pressure from fish, still the biomass of zooplankton is totally regulated by the bottom-up method, and that's sterols. The reason is here. So here is different type of algae at glass level, and then there is terrestrial leaves, and then there is cyanobacteria. Cyanobacteria and any other bacteria, they don't produce sterols. And here is the model which I developed, its sterol index, and when it's below 1, then zooplankton suffers of sterol limitation. So in environmental, when we have lots of cyanobacteria blooming, the zooplankton suffers very much of sterol limitation. And basically, like all algae, bacteria, and even terrestrial leaves, they contain some amino acids. So in difference in amino acids is usually in quantity, not in quality. But when it comes to the fatty acid and essential fatty acids, the difference is also in quality and in quantity. And in orange and yellow, you can see those EPA, DHA, which are physiologically important. And when we go up in trophic levels, they become more and more important. When we look at the globe, and there has been lots of talk in change, we usually think that green area is those where we get all the harvest. But there is biomolecules which are only produced in oceans and fresh waters, and they are long chain EPA and DHA. In simplistic model, based on increase in temperature, says that in near future, even 96% of people may not have access to sufficient DHA in the future. And this is very simplistic model. And my research is to do more like detailed analysis what will happen in the future. And one of my studies was to study different type of lakes, like oligotrophics, eutrophic, and brown water lakes, and see how these essential EPA and DHA are produced and transferred. When we have eutrophication, we have always more biomass. But it's important in trophic transfer that how much there is biomolecules per carbon. So my study showed that you need to have double portion of fish from eutrophic lake in relation to oligotrophic lakes. So we need double portion of fish to have sufficient level of EPA and DHA. This is what happens when the environmental changes. And this is my PhD students' study, what we did in the gradient. So in this gradient, there is change in temperature, DOC, and nutrients. And of course, there's always change in community structure, which changes naturally how much there's different biomolecules available. So there's two changes going on at the same time. One is the change in community structure, and the other change is in change in quality and availability of essential biomolecules. So there's two changes going on. And here you can see the change in the community structure, and here you can see the change in the quality. And we need to take account, both of them, to understand what's going to happen in our world. And here is the picture of my research, what I'm doing now, what I'm going to do in the future, and what kind of teaching I'm doing. So I have divided it three parts. The first is production of essential biomolecules, which I'm measuring these different kind of biomolecules from freshwater systems and the river systems, and how algae and different type of algae produce them. And key word here is mixotrophic algae, which can feed on bacteria. So it can feed on bacteria, which, and it's adapt and mitigation to the browning. And it's interesting to know when lakes are more browning, so there's less photosynthesis, so then they start feeding on bacteria, how that influence on the production of essential biomolecules. Then there's trophic retention in the food web, and we are here. And because these are essential, these biomolecules, they are retained in the trophic, especially EPA and DHA. And what happens to different organisms is that how much we have genetic ability to produce ourselves from the precursors of different biomolecules. And that I call genetic flexibility. Then we have, and I study inputs, terrestrial and anthropogenic inputs, and DOC, lignin, carbon hydrates, what's coming to forest, and then different synthetic polymers, microplastics, and mercury. This is the microbial food chains, which have ability to decompose and do simplistic biomolecules. And that's I'm studying currently. And then this biotransformation is very important, that from these simplistic biomolecules, this mixotrophic algae can do essential biomolecules, which can support and some extent to the food web. Then, of course, it's important to modeling the what are these fluxes of biomolecules and carbon flow, which we are doing my modeling, and then answer the questions that when the lake is changing or eutrophying, what is the impact of lake restoration management? And that's we can do the modeling. And my question is how global and local change increase temperature, precipitation, nutrients, and quality, and DOC influence. And that's my research. And here is the fundings of my research. And then I have also some collaborative fundings doing this research and answering these important questions. Here is the key methods which I'm using in my research. And there's four key methods which to have these 13 carbon rich experiments that we can track the fate of different biomolecules. Then to have biomarkers and doing modelings, metatranscriptomics to connect these biomarkers to microbes and to measure compound-specific stable isotopes. And then there is different fields which I'm using in my research. So my academic project, quality project, have a goal to estimate how these EPA and DHA is available in the future in different fresh waters. We have currently a simplistic model, and future we do experiments with temperature, light conditions, phosphorins, and DOC based on the measurements from different field sites from 50 to 100 years, and we simulate laboratory experiments, and then we integrate those to the future models, and then we can have an estimate in the future how much there is EPA and DHA in the future. Here is my collaborators and the places where we're studying what is going to happen. And all these sites have 50 to 100 years the measurement records, and we can see the changes in different parameters. And that's we are simulating in the laboratory. Then there is the endogenous production especially what comes to EPA and DHA. And it can be measured in two ways. Here you can see that it can be measured by expression of these two genes. And that's what I'm going to do in my academic project. And then we are going to also measure using this compound-specific system that how this 13 enrichment. So this is the EPA, and here we can see that it's becoming more and more enriched. And then we can calculate exactly what is the ability of organisms to bioconvert this biomolecule. And this is from my recent paper, and this is the system how we measure these stable isotopes from different biomolecules, which is the very useful tool in my studies, and I'm doing this. And when we have in department this instrument, I will help to using it. So here is the modeling. So we can model this, as you can see, that here's the fatty acid composition of the phytoplankton, and we can model it. And then when we microscope it, the results is almost the same. So that's how useful biomarkers these fatty acids are. And when we put together all different kind of biomarkers, we can have even the better separation. And the next step is that we model what zooplankton is feeding on, and now we are going to also extend that to different kind of zooplankton and amphipods and primarily to fish to see what they are feeding on currently, and then we can know that when environmental change, that how these carbon and biomolecular fluxes are changing. And in our team are Jaakko and Tommy. And Tommy is helping in this Bayesian core mathematical things, and Jaakko is doing his PhD. And it will be also a tool for helping that how lake restoration acts are impacting. And then I skip this. The other question is that what is the biochemical fate of recalcitrant part of terrestrial organic carbon and microplastic carbon? And we can do it by using all these four methods which I told you before. And here is the schematic picture of it, that we are interested first of the biodecoration and then biotransformation. We use these 13 carbon experiments, which we can then feed on like zooplankton, mixotrophic also. And we are measuring microbial community. We do quantitative analysis here and here. And we also develop the method. And this is the protocol which we can use for any natural and synthetical polymers to understand how fast they are decomposed and what is the actual biochemical fate. And this paper, where we first directly measured what happens to microplastic in fresh waters, we were able to see that some specific fatty acids became more labeled in humic lakes. So we know that there's bacteria which are able to decompose it. And then we made metatranscriptomics, and we can look at that, what may be possible taxa to decomposing. And I'm correctly, first time we have measured that we know how many years it takes to polyethylene decompose in humic and clear water lakes. So we can do exact calculation. And this is the only way to do it, because the decomposition is so slow that like DNA SIP doesn't work with that, because it requires a higher decomposing rate. And we showed then that biotransformation, that Cryptomonas algae made omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids of these simplistic bacterial fatty acids. And this is research, what I'm doing now, We are doing more microplastics, lignin, different materials, and this will explode this area. This is the current high-tech tool. And here is all lab analysis, what you can see, and thank you. So the baseline is that we do experiments with liposomes, and we can add like different biomolecules, and we can see if they grow or not. So for example, in Daphnia, we can give them bacteria, and they die. And then we measure what are biomolecules in bacteria. And we know there's amino acids and some carbohydrates. Then we add liposomes like omega-3, PUFA and sterols, and then we see if they survive or not. And that's how we build up the map of Potato Essentia. But of course, it's more complex when you go up into trophic levels, like with fish. But then we have like diets that which don't have some specific biomolecules, and then we can see, okay, if it's this or not that, which the limit in the growth. We always do first, yes, the laboratory experiments, and then we apply that to the nature. So we do both at the same time. Yes. So maybe I can say here if you don't spread it because it's not published. So in optimal conditions in humic lakes, it takes 20 years. 100 years in clear water lakes and without microbes, 500 years. Yes, that's the very good questions, how these different pollutants influence the microbial community. I'm mostly interested on the mercury, and I'm collaborating. But of course, it's influence, but currently, like what we are most interested and what have like most influence in microbial community, is it the quality of dissolved organic carbon? Is it new, old, fresh? And of course, if there is high amount of some pollutant, it's have effect to microbial community. And we are doing some studies with different chemicals also. But it's more like my collaborating projects than my own core knowledge.
Okay, Joni.
The way we get, for example, PUFA or these fatty acids is that we buy these pills and they are extracted from fish, I think, usually. And it requires a lot of fishing and these kind of things, and then you said that it's possible to culture perhaps these algae and directly then culture those species that are most rich in these essential biomolecules. Can you tell something more about this? Is it, would it be easy to capture these algae and just start selling those? Should
yes.
we rely on fishing?
Yes. So that's the good question, how easily we could capture these phytoplankton. So like spirulina, what we can buy from the store. So usually it's the biomass what's the most critical, that we need to, lots of biomass to have harvest and to have economical. So unfortunately, like green algae, which does not produce these EPND, they like grow very fast. And these phytoplankton, which produce EPNDHA, grow very slowly. So it's not like a financially like good way to do it. So you can have these short chain buffa from spirulina green algae, but it's not easy to work with these specific algae strains.